Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome to Overnight America. This Thursday night edition is the last show of the week for me. So we mix things up a little bit, and we'll keep the phone lines open for you. A little bit later, we'll open them up, and you can talk about whatever you want. This first hour, we have a couple of guests. Mike McCoy is his name, and he's an author of a book about asteroids. What would happen to our society if we got hit by one of those bad boys? It's an interesting thought. We're going to talk to Dan Perkins next hour. He's an Islamic historian, a terrorism expert. What's going on in Israel right now? We continue to see more missile attacks going on there, more impeachment talk. We'll talk about that later tonight. But first, our very special guest. This is actually my first time having him on the show from the KMOX Garden Hotline. Mike Miller, thank you for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. Good gardening to everybody.
I listen to your show frequently because I'm
sure,
out a lot on Saturdays.
Sure, I believe that.
I do. Why? Because I'm one of those guys that has to take about 8 trips to Home Depot to get what I really need. So I'm in the car a lot on the weekends. So I had a question for you, and it has to do with a story in Kansas City, and they were talking to some environmentalist experts, and they said, when you start to get those leaves in your yard like we're getting now and in mass quantities, and there's still leaves on the trees, but you get the half of them on the yard right now, they say the best thing for you to do is just to mow over them, let it mulch. And I thought, you know, this is a topic I better talk to Mike Miller about first. What's the proper way to take care of leaves?
Basically to get rid of them.
Yeah?
To mow them doesn't do a darn thing. Mowing and letting them just sit on your lawn can cause way more problems than you could possibly imagine. It seems like, well, it's organic, it's leaf mulch, it's this, it's that, but that's not really the whole case of what's really going on. And it's not just your lawn, it's your garden space and everything else. It's fine to mulch, and it's fine to mulch with a mulching mower, but you have to understand that your lawn, even if it's zoysia and going dormant, you know, which it is this time of year, which is a warm season grass, your cool season lawns, your fescues and bluegrasses, still need sunshine. Mm-hmm. And so if that mulch that you've mowed from fallen leaves is over an inch deep, then your lawn is not getting any sunlight. And so sunlight is very crucial as far as keeping your lawn healthy. Another really bad aspect of this is once the mulch, you know, from the mowing gets over an inch deep, it really prevents your soil, which the soil is actually a living element in your landscape, from being able to, let's say, evaporate the moisture. So then you get a high moisture content, and then you get more and more problems related to fungus. So the funguses this time of year, let's say slash winter, are not deadly. What they do is just weaken your lawn in general and make it so it's going to be much more susceptible to fungal problems in the summertime, which that's where the deadly fungus actually occurs.
Wow. So when I watched that report, and we even played it here, and I was talking about how, wait, if any of my neighbors saw me, if all I was doing was mowing over the leaves, they would not be happy with me.
Well, they could care less because what you're doing only affects your lawn, so it doesn't affect theirs.
Look at it and they'd say, well, look at this guy. Look at this kid out there mowing his lawn and like that. You know, and they're all doing the hard work picking the leaves up.
But, I mean, you can actually use mowers to bag them, you know, to bag up your to leaves that have fallen and everything else, but you just can't let them lay on top of, you know, and it's not just lawn, it's other garden space as well. That's really, really important. And it's like I said, it just causes major problems with evaporation, breathing of the soil, and then obviously, as I said before, the sunlight hitting your cool season lawns is really crucial, even though you don't see your lawn necessarily growing rapidly during the wintertime or during the fall. It still needs the sunlight to stay healthy. And if it doesn't have sunlight because it's buried in a, let's say, a layer of mulch or mowed leaves that is over an inch deep, then you're really creating a nightmare.
Wow. From the KMOX Garden Hotline, Mike Miller, also MikeMillerDesigns.com. I got some more gardening and lawn questions for you, if that's all right.
Sure.
So I read this online once, and maybe you can help me, because now with all the leaves falling, I also have those gumball trees in the neighborhood, and they're all over. They fall with them. So I read online somewhere you could treat these trees. There's something that businesses do where they inject something at the base of the tree, and then it doesn't grow the gumballs. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, there is actually a product that will do it. It was developed in California originally because a lot of trees in California, street tree-wise, are olive trees. And they just got sick and tired of, the olives dropping on the ground and everything else. So a company came up with this product. And what it does, the injection has to be very specific as far as timing-wise. It has to be just as the sweet gum tree here is in flower, it interrupts the flowering process, and once the flowering process is interrupted, then it cannot form the sweet gum balls. But if the timing is not crucially correct, then you've just wasted a heck of a lot of money, mental money and real money both.
How much money does it cost to treat? I'm curious.
No idea. I'm afraid to even ask, but it's substantial, depending upon the size of the tree, of course.
Yeah, and of course, too, I know I would screw it up. I'm sure I would.
So, well, you can't do it yourself.
Oh, you can't? You have to hire someone.
Yeah. To try to do it yourself, it would be foolish, and I'm not even sure that the chemical is available for a person that's not licensed with a pesticide license applicator circumstance, so I don't think I wouldn't even try to, I wouldn't try to do it myself. Let's put it that way.
So trying to find black market underground gumball tree treatment's a bad idea. But what is it? Is it too late to do anything to your yard anymore because how cold it's been? Or do we still have time to do maybe some other, winterizers or anything like that on it?
Cool season lawns can still be, fertilized with a winterizer type fertilizer because, that's just a circumstance. Once we get past Thanksgiving, it's getting a little bit late. But other than that, and with your cool season lawn, too, also you should keep mowing because it will keep growing, until the days get really, really short, which the shortest day as far as daylight goes is going to be December 22nd. Then the growth is going to really be slowed down, even for a cool season lawn or for evergreen perennials, be it ground covers or whatever it happens to be. But, you can. There's still plenty of things to do, and this is an ideal time for garden spaces to be putting mulch down because the ground's cool. You want to keep the coolness there, not as opposed to putting mulch down earlier in the season when the ground is still warm, because that will keep the ground warm beyond the point where the plant material could actually be damaged by putting mulch down earlier in the fall.
Mm. Is it too late to grow grass on a patch of dirt?
Yes, especially from seed. I mean, unless you're just crazy and you got a bag of seed in your garage and you know that by next spring it's going to probably lose about 50% of its durability as far as being able to germinate. Yeah. And I've seen a couple garden centers still do have some sod. It's just you're taking a big chance because if your sod is not able to penetrate from a root system standpoint into the ground, and we have a really harsh winter time, then your sod is not going to be able to survive.
I see. See, I pulled out an above-ground garden this year, and I was too lazy to put the seed down in time. And then next thing you know, too late. So I got a big square patch of dirt in the backyard I'm going to have to take care of next year. So got anything good planned for this weekend show?
Nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, I go out and I kind of walk through the neighborhoods and everything else and just kind of keep my eyes open for what potentially is going to happen. I will say one thing, though, as far as like even spring flowering bulbs, we're getting to the point where you better get them in the ground really, really quickly because they've got to get their root system established to be able to give you flowers next spring. That's daffodils, tulips, crocus, and all those types.
Wow. You've been doing this for 25 years now?
25-plus years.
Wow. Amazing. That's just beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, that shows you how old I am.
It shows you just how good you are, the longevity of it all, one of the longest shows on KMOX. That's amazing. That is so cool. So, of course, people can check you out on the weekends, on Saturdays. And I'll tell you, I listen to it, and I enjoy the Garden Hotline. You're 8 to 10, and I'm telling you, every time you make that extra trip to Home Depot or Lowe's or the Gardening Center, anywhere else, I always have you on.
Well, great. Well, thanks. I greatly appreciate you for having me on your show, and you for having me on your show, meaning the Garden Hotline, because if the people that weren't listening weren't there, I would not be there either.
Mike Miller, and your website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. And, of course, check him out this Saturday starting at 8 a.m. with the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. That is so cool. Such a nice guy. Super nice guy. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Overnight America. Author Mike McCoy on asteroids. What would happen to society if we had one of those land right here? Not good. Not good. Oh, by the way, this is kind of fascinating when it comes to space things. You know that meteor that went over St. Louis a couple of days ago? And you know how there's researchers that would pay top dollar if you were to find a chunk of that thing somewhere. 25 grand, I think, was what they would pay to get it. There's a reason why these are so incredibly valuable. And one of the reasons why it's so incredibly valuable is because there's a hypothesis out there that, let's say, many years ago, an asteroid or some really large object smashed into Mars, and it smashed into Mars with so much velocity, a bunch of Mars rocks shot up into space. And all of those space rocks are just circulating around, and one day we're just so lucky enough that it gets into close proximity with Earth. Gravity sucks it in, and we see the meteorite go and land in our soil. Ultimately, I mean, there is a chance that meteorite is from Mars, and there have been ones discovered in the past because they can do the analysis, and they're super valuable. Because you can't, I mean, there's not really an ability for us to go fly to Mars, pick up rock samples, and bring them back. Okay, but there's also, think about this too. If there's just these rocks flying around in space, who knows where they came from? They're extremely valuable because of how rare they are. You just don't get to find them all that often. There's actually people that will go onto rooftops with metal detectors, and then they'll search. They'll think they'll find something, and they'll send it back for analysis. Just little dust, like the chance that you get a little speck of something from space is something that could be of value. That's how rare these things are. So it's actually pretty cool. Not that I'm an expert on it by any means, but I just was fascinated by it. So we're going to talk asteroids with author Mike McCoy coming up after the weather here in just a couple of minutes. I want to mention this, too. I am going to be riding the Ferris wheel tomorrow. So the St. Louis wheel that's downtown at Union Station, the one that went up at the end of September, maybe it was October 1st it opened, but it's only been open for a few months. And I see the thing outside of our window here. I can look, and right past Soldiers Memorial, I can see just a little glimpse of the wheel at night because it's all lit up. And if you're driving, and if you are leaving, like Busch Stadium, for example, from downtown, that thing is a landmark. It is a landmark. And it's so cool looking. And it's just the way that the elevations change in downtown, you could be leaving from the stadium, and you'd be driving up maybe towards west, and you would see this thing there. And it looks more than 200 feet. This thing looks like it's about 1,000 feet up in the sky. It looks like, you know, a second arch over there. It's pretty impressive. So I'm going to ride it tomorrow. We got some passes here that they sent out to a couple people in media. So my family's going to go on it, and I'm going to give you a full report next week. And next week, we have a full week slated. And then after that is Thanksgiving week. I'm going to be off for the week of Thanksgiving, but I will be producing a Thanksgiving special. So tonight I could use your help. I'm looking for stories of thankfulness. What are you thankful for? And I know it's kind of like an open-ended question that every single person asks this time of year, but you could really help me because when I start producing this special, I would like to include your calls into it, listeners and things of what they're thankful for. I just want to play like Alice's Restaurant twice in, you know, the Thanksgiving song by Adam Sandler. There's only a few Thanksgiving songs out there, but I do want to include interviews from the staff members. And I want you to be part of that project, too. I'm going to open up the lines at 10 o'clock tonight for that. So if you think about it, okay, if you need to think about it a little bit, I want you to call in after 10 o'clock, and we'll talk about the things that you are thankful for. And I got my own things that I'm thankful for, too. All right, so Asteroids, author Mike McCoy, he's going to join us in just a moment. And what's interesting about this is what would happen to the governments if there was a giant meteor strike? What would happen if you had to choose where only certain people can get saved from this thing? I mean, there's some pretty serious things that could happen there. So we'll talk to him coming up next on Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Oh, so exciting. The Thursday night in St. Louis. We have a very special guest for the next half hour. It's author Mike McCoy. Thank you for coming on to KMOX.
Hey, thank you, Ryan. Happy to be here.
You wrote a book about asteroids, a book called Asteroids. And I wanted to mention, did you see the meteorite that went through St. Louis a couple days ago?
I did see the news. Wasn't that exciting?
Super exciting. Got everyone talking. I mean, people were wondering, what in the world did they just see? And great, fantastic video of it, too. I know for your sake, you've been researching this a lot, asteroids and whatnot. Do you pay close attention to any story that happens to mention an asteroid that's close to the planet Earth?
You know, I've searched and Googled for asteroids so much. My news feed always gives me the asteroid news for some reason. Google or Yahoo just seem to know my interest, I guess.
You like that song by Aerosmith that they used for Armageddon?
I don't remember it.
Oh, I don't want to miss a thing. You know, the one that for the asteroid movie? You remember Armageddon, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I remember the movie.
Oh, so asteroids, let's talk about this. So you did a lot of research, but what's the book about?
The book is about the near future. It kind of plays a what if there was a secret part of the government. We've never had a secret part of the government. I know it's fantasy, but if a secret part of the government knew that an asteroid storm was coming to Earth, but kept it secret, and they went to very extreme measures to keep it secret, but built underground cities to protect their few and fortunate.
So they would have had a lot of time to know this thing was coming.
Yeah, they knew some time. They had some time. They worked very, very hard to keep it secret.
Uh-huh.
And one astrophysicist figures out what's happening. So they coerce him to come visit and kidnap him when they figure out he knows the asteroid storm's coming. He doesn't want to cooperate. He wants to be home with his family in Pasadena, California.
Mm-hmm.
So he escapes and works his way home, and the adventure ensues.
I like ideas like this. And it makes me wonder, too, would the government be the first to pick up on this, or would it be some private entity or agency that would be tracking these things that would pick up? But I guess the government would be pretty close. Because I scratch my head sometimes because they'd mention, oh, we just had a close one, and they had no idea it was coming by. So it makes me wonder, too. They just don't know. So that's kind of the premise, that maybe they're holding some information away from us. That's kind of the same line of thought.
Yep. Yeah. But this is a real storm. It's going to come basically devastate mankind. So it's a big one. And so the main character, Rick Munday, wants to try to warn the world. So he meets some friends along the way. Get some warning out to people, but there's really not much time. So there's some death and destruction in the book.
Yeah.
And the bad guys from the secret government are kind of after him.
So the book is called Asteroids. And do you have a bunker, or have you at least considered building your own bunker?
I can't tell you.
No. I like the people that build bunkers out of like retired school buses. They just dig a trench underground and get them that way.
They bury them. Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of like that.
The main character's uncle in the book is kind of a doomsday prepper, and he built a hideaway up in the San Gabriel Mountains, north of Los Angeles, beyond the Bridge to Nowhere. Mm. And so the main character has to get past the Bridge to Nowhere to get home.
Well, I want to talk about some of the ideas that you may have thought about for this book and maybe the research process behind them. And author Mike McCoy joining us on KMOX, author of Asteroids. So let's say, hypothetically, something like this actually happened. Let's just say, what are the odds that you believe the government may actually try to hide or conceal this information for whatever purposes? It could be the purpose of they want to stop mass hysteria. It could be the purpose of they just want to be able to, you know, keep it quiet for their own personal purposes. What do you think the odds that's exactly what the government would do?
Boy, you know, that's kind of the dilemma that the book covers. In the book, Colonel Cruikshank has something he calls the Bliss Protocol. He wants to keep everybody in blissful ignorance because he feels that human nature, if we knew in advance, we would just riot and murder and kill each other. And if we have very little notice, we may be more honorable and, you know, do things to help each other.
Oh, interesting.
So, you know, that's kind of plays out in the book. So I don't know what our government would do. I think our government might be too busy fighting with each other to actually warn us.
There's that one Steve Carell movie where it was an idea where an asteroid was going to hit. And I remember the end of the movie where the newscaster last second said, well, we've just been informed. We thought we had another week, but apparently we only have an hour. So see you later. You know, it was one of those moments. So it was the sense that the government would hide that, thinking that they would have a last-minute play. How do you think is there any chance we would even be able to stop an asteroid, or are we pretty much doomed?
Well, at the current moment, we're doomed. Yeah. But there are concepts called planetary defense, and there are some planned missions. The idea that you could, if you have enough time, you know, years probably, that you could launch a rocket or rockets at an asteroid and move it, kind of push it into a different orbit and change its trajectory. There will actually be a test mission from NASA called DART. It'll launch in 2021 that will actually attempt to do that. But that's the first real test mission. So if something were coming at us next week or next month or next year, we'd be pretty doomed.
I don't like the sounds of this because they're not going to get this up by 2021. They're always way late. So they had that one Webb telescope that should have been launched years ago. You know, they keep pushing it back and back and back. So I feel like when there's things like this that are untested, it does take a little bit longer than it should before they can get them back up there.
And the device, the telescope that they have today to look for asteroids is a device called NEOWISE. And it had a different mission, and they repurposed it. So we kind of have a used car in space that they gave a new purpose. And it's supposed to be looking for asteroids. But it hasn't found them all. And, you know, like there was no warning the other night in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And, and like you said, there are a lot of times where we have these near misses and we find out NASA learned of this asteroid 1 or 2 days ago, or they learned of it after it passed.
Where are you based? Are you in California?
I'm in California. I'm in the Los Angeles area.
Ah, okay. So you look at those websites where you can punch in your location and it'll tell you just how devastating a direct asteroid hit would be?
Yeah, of course.
And it scares you, wakes you up real quick. I mean, depending on how big these asteroids are, it could be Earth ending, you know? Or it could be just the half the hemisphere ending, or it could be country ending. I mean, it's pretty devastating. There's other natural disasters that we need to be concerned about, like what's the Yosemite volcanoes, and, you know, there could be other things that are just disasters you can't stop. A big earthquake along the fault line out there, we're just waiting for one of those. And there's all these other things. Oh, scary stuff out there. Asteroids are off the radar. People don't normally, well, that's no pun intended, but they essentially, they don't pay attention to the asteroid strike that you just can't. Like the same thing with the sun. We stopped talking about these solar flares and things that can just cripple our electric grid. And that could happen at any time, too. All of these devastating things at any time could be lingering right over us. It's scary thought.
It is. It is. And so it was fun to take those that scary scenario and turn it into a fun adventure. With some fun future science and a little astronomy and whatnot, and some great characters. So I think, you know, even though it's scary and, you know, people die in the book and whatnot, but I think it's a good, fun read. But it's a topic that, you know, hopefully people will be more aware of.
How many people die in your book?
Millions.
Millions. Okay, yeah. So how devastating, like how big of an asteroid do you predict that would hit Earth, and then like how devastating is it?
This is not one asteroid. This is an asteroid storm.
Oh.
So it's a series, you know, as Earth turns, so all the asteroids are coming from one direction in space.
Oh, great.
And as the Earth turns, you know, every evening, the storm is hitting us. Of course, you know, it's hitting 24 hours a day. It's hitting different parts of Earth. But every evening, you know, the storm becomes more and more devastating.
I don't know how you're not prepping after doing any little bit of research. You think you're on some government watch list now based on what you researched?
As I was writing this, I was searching for all kinds of things, you know, like planetary defense weapons and nuclear missiles and all kinds of things. And I really expected a knock on my door.
Yeah. What country do you think is most equipped to help or at least survive? Like, let's say the United States takes one of these, is much different than, I don't know, it's a lesser developed country taking a direct hit. Like, what do you think the odds a country like the United States would be able to have an after asteroid civilization?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on, you know, how many or how, you know, how big and devastating it is. Even though we're a big country, there's a lot of empty space, you know, in between the coasts. So it just depends on where it hits and how big, but and remember, we have a lot of ocean, so there are a lot of asteroids that come through the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And so once they come through the atmosphere, they're meteors. Mm-hmm. They come through and they hit the ocean. And so there's actually, I have to look at my book to find out the term, but there's actually a nuclear weapons listening system that listens for nuclear explosions in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And many years ago, they started picking up, you know, these rumblings, and they would check and say, well, there was no nuclear weapon exploding or anything, and they're asteroids.
Oh,
penetrating,
man.
And it happens a lot, but most of them hit the ocean.
Oh, we're so lucky. Luck is a big part of it, isn't it? We're so lucky sometimes.
It is, it is. So how are you at craps?
Am I, don't know how to play.
Oh, you're lucky.
What, you spent a lot of time at the table?
I've been to Vegas a few times.
Yeah, okay, you're close enough to it. It's like a little drive. You know, it takes about 8 hours to get out of Los Angeles and then, what, 2 hours to Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Something like that. All right, so I want to continue our conversation if you don't mind holding on.
Sure. It'd be great.
Great. Author Mike McCoy joining us now, and his book's called Asteroids. And it's, you know, it's a look of what could happen in the not-so-distant future. Let's say if we did have a direct hit here on Earth, what would happen next? And there's a couple of other things. We talked a little bit about the government response, but I want to talk about what happens to society after and tough decisions you would have to make as an individual trying to survive this thing. I'm sure there's a lot of tough decisions. So we'll ask him about those next on Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
That sounds kind of futuristic. No, I think we should do this as the song back into it. This is much more appropriate. As we talk about asteroids in a new book called Asteroids by author Mike McCoy, what would really happen if there was a giant asteroid strike? Not just one, but multiple that just peppered all across the planet. I have a feeling you wouldn't feel as calm and collective like this Aerosmith song during that one movie about asteroids. I feel like you'd be a lot more frantic. There'd probably be a lot more screaming. And I want to thank again our guest, Mike McCoy, for hanging on. Thank you, Mike.
Hey, Ryan, thank you.
I had to find that song real quick to get it on just before.
Good
I had
job.
To. All right, so let's say there is a devastating event that is world-threatening. Let's say there are survivors. When you were doing your research and were coming up with ideas of what would happen after an event like this, how optimistic are you that we would be able to get back to some sort of civilized society, or do you feel like we'd be pretty much toast after that? We'd just be at our own little areas, and there wouldn't really be much of a civilized society left.
Yeah, I mean, in the scenario of this story is things would be pretty wiped out. I focus on basically the first 4 or 5 days, and so the next book in the series, which is being written, will focus on kind of more what happens next and how people survive. But it's really in this scenario where there's the people are really devastated. You know, there's not going to be you won't have internet data. Mm-hmm. Your shopping markets will have been looted, you know, very, very quickly. You're going to really have to fend for yourself, and the people that can make it to some protected places, like in the book, there's some underground cities, people that can make it to the underground cities where there's food and resources and things like that, or to, you know, a prepper location that's also in the book, they can survive. But and so our main character tries to save more people and get them into these underground cities. And so they go through some computer hacking and all kinds of stuff to try to break into these underground cities, which is kind of fun.
Do you find that there's a moral dilemmas going on, too, about who gets what and if you should help someone, if you have the ability to help someone?
Exactly. And so, yeah, so you know, the people that are in these protected cities, they want it just for themselves. And our main character and his friends try to hack their way in. They even create a video game to get enough people working to break in through their computers and stuff to open the doors. So they try to get thousands of people into these cities, but they have the resources to handle more. The family that's in this little hideaway beyond the Bridge to Nowhere, they've built a prepper environment that can only handle a certain number of people. And they have the dilemma, if they add one or two more, they may all die. Mm-hmm. So do we let in one or two more and maybe sacrifice all of us? Or do we have to make the decision to not let them in?
Ooh, classic scenarios that people debate. Would you be able to do it yourself? Would you not? And I wonder, too, if you were doing the thoughts and the research on if an asteroid hits Earth, what would you say is the one thing you may have found that shocks you the most about all of this?
You know, I think it's that it could happen. As I was writing it, I thought, well, you know, I need to have a reasonable, plausible cause for an asteroid storm to come to Earth. So I did some research and stuff, and I wrote up, you know, these pages of how the storm is coming to Earth. And I read a news article by a Dr. Joe Nuth of NASA's Goddard Space Lab. Mm-hmm. And I wrote to him and said, hey, here's what I wrote. What do you think? And he's like, that's crap. That's impossible. That would never happen. But here's how it could happen.
Oh, okay.
So he gave me the reasonable, plausible cause of an asteroid storm. And so, you know, he edited it. He ended up reading the whole book. And so it could really happen.
I know. It can really happen.
That's the scary part.
I got too much stuff going on. I way too much stuff to go on in my life that it's like one extra thing to have to worry about, you know? Now, there's nothing. That's the thing. I know for sure. You brought this up, that it would be hidden. It would have to be hidden. I think this way too. I'm not much of a conspiracy person. I love reading conspiracy theories, but I'm not one that really gets into them or believes them. But I truly believe that the government will hide things if they think it's in the best interest of the people. If they find out there was one of these things that were going to hit, or if they find out there was aliens or something like that, totally believe the government would hide it. So it does. It does make me want to go out and buy all the bottled water I can possibly fit into my car. It makes me want to go out and get that Costco size, the 20-year mac and cheese jug. I want to get all of those things just to prepare for it. But at the same time, I know there's a lot of other people preparing too. You don't want to tell people you're preparing. You don't want them to know, because then they're all going to come to you. And what are you going to do at that point?
That's right. Like, I'm knocking on your door when it all goes to hell. But, you know, we can't, you know, obviously we can't live our lives worrying and, you know, saying, you know, Chicken Little, the sky's falling. But I think, you know, the government needs to work to be prepared because asteroids have hit Earth before and they will again.
Yeah.
And so this, you know, the book is a fun adventure. They're, you know, fun characters and it's a good adventure. Fun read, but it also something that could actually happen.
Yeah, did you handicap what are the actual odds of something like this happening?
Gosh, no, I don't know.
There's probably a better chance of an earthquake hitting you guys first before an asteroid, I would think at least. But you
probably
never know. Yeah,
that's California scary. Will most likely have a big earthquake.
Yeah. Before you know it,
or the whole state will burn up, or something like that.
Oh yeah, it could happen. Well, we're on the phone right now, so if people wanted to check out your book Asteroids, where can they find it?
You can find it on Amazon.com or anywhere ebooks are sold. You can also visit MikeMcCoy.org for more information. There's some articles about the technology and things about asteroids and stuff like that on the website.
Audiobook.
Audiobook, not yet.
Oh, okay.
Articles on the technology and things like that. Check it out on Amazon.com or Apple iBooks or any place ebooks are sold.
Asteroids, not just a game you played in the 70s, something very real in our future.
Yes.
Mike McCoy, author, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, that's a... It's kind of fun, but it isn't. Like, it's this could happen, and my way of life will be completely flipped upside down, and I probably won't survive. But, you know, it's a fun exercise to think about the possibilities. It's probably better to think about it than not. He joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk to author Dan Perkins. You probably saw the headlines, or maybe you didn't. A lot of the national news has just been, impeachment, 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 impeachment. Impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. So they haven't really focused too much of what was happening overseas. And one of our greatest allies there, Israel, continues to be under attack. And I wanted to talk to someone about that, give us a rundown, because if you've missed this story, you're not alone. So what has been happening, we're going to talk to Dan Perkins. He's a terrorism analyst. Rockets launched at Israel after a ceasefire. What's going to happen next? What's going on in that area? What's the latest? He joins us next on Overnight America KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.